reporters, our correspondents from across the globe, will bring you fascinating reports on a variety of subjects from their regions, offering a unique global perspective. So don't go anywhere. Up next is another segment of our radio productions.
Kerman is counted as one of the oldest cities, and it was founded as a defensive outpost with the name Veh Ardashir by Ardashir I, founder of the Sasanid Empire, in the 3rd century AD. Kerman was ruled by Turkmens, Arabs, and Mongols after the 7th century, and was expanded rapidly during the Safavid dynasty. When Marco Polo visited Kerman in 1271, it had become a major trade center linking the Persian Gulf with Khorasan and Central Asia.
Ganjadi Khan was the governor of Kerman during the Safavid era. He ruled thousands of cities and towns from Fars province all the way to the city of Herat in today's Afghanistan. During his time, he built lots of public places in the city of Kerman, including this huge square, bazaar, mosque, and a public bath.
Kerman's Jame, or central mosque, is a part of the Muzaffari aggregate and was completed in 1345 AD. By Amir Mubarizuddin Muhammad Muzaffari Meybudi Yazdi. The mosque is one of the most ancient structures of the country and a remnant of the Iranian monarchs after the Alibuye dynasty. The mosque has a tall gateway in its eastern sector, and the same has been decorated with beautiful tile work. A clock tower aids in the enhancement of this entrance. The structure has been constructed in a symmetrical fashion and has a winter and summer porch.
Walking through dark and narrow halls to enter a huge and lighted area is a style in Islamic architecture of the Safavid era to give you the sense of joy and pleasure of entering a place like a public bath, which was not only for personal sanitation, but also for socializing, with people coming, sitting down, smoking hookah and pipe, and talking about social and political issues, or even finding husbands and wives for their kids, back in the old days style.
Built in the Safavid period, this courtyard is home to what was once Kerman's most important hammam or bathhouse, the Hammam Ganjali Khan, now restored and transformed into a museum. With the conversion of the population of Iran to Islam, ritual purity through washing one's body became a requirement of religious life. Thenceforth, bathing became an integral part of life. Besides, baths were frequented not only for purity and hygienic reasons, but also for medical purposes. Physicians prescribed taking the waters against a great variety of ailments.
Whenever I get a chance to travel to different cities of this beautiful land of Iran, I definitely stop by the bazaar of that city. Not just for shopping, but for the whole experience. Experience of meeting people from different backgrounds, with different ethnicities, different ages, different dialects, and so on. Another part of this experience is the pleasant scent of the bazaar. Smells of colorful and different spices, dried fruits, and even dried dairy products. It's just amazing.
A review of Iran's economic and social history indicates that the bazaar has always been a pillar of civic foundations. No town could survive without the bazaar, whether big or small. Some have allegorically described bazaar as the economic heartbeat of the Iranian cities. The ancient Iranian bazaars have gradually evolved into an encompassing section of the town. A bazaar was not a secluded section of the town, but home to a wide spectrum of goods and services sought by the townspeople. Archaeologists could find proofs of the existence of a 6,000-year-old bazaar in a place called Khabis near Kerman, a place which is now called Shahdad. I know you definitely want to know more about Kerman, and I'm not finished exploring this city. So we'll see you soon in the next program about some other attractions of Kerman. Shahryar Azimi for Iran.
Heard the boastful Persian saying that art only belongs to Iranians. With their wide variety in color and patterns, and each motif and design specific to a particular region, Persian carpets are definitely something to boast about. In Iran, carpets have always been both symbolic and practical. A popular design that is often used in this region is called Rizmahi, which means the little fish. Quality craftsmanship is the name of the game, and the painstaking procedure of knotting, invented by ancient Persians, is a means to reflect a people's identity. It may take a group of up to 15 carpet weavers nearly a year to create the masterpieces that will be decorating the floors, giving any room warmth and style. Iranians are definitely the masters of weaving. Jajim, which is a kind of thick two-sided cloth, itself can be considered enough evidence to support the boastful statement that art only belongs to Iranians. There was a time when jajim was considered a luxury item, but today it's used for making traditional handbags, something you can take back home as a souvenir from Iran. Jajim is normally 2.5 meters long and 2 meters wide. And although its patterns may vary, the simpler and more common jajim includes stripes 1 to 5 centimeters wide of different colors. Sometimes to create a checkered pattern, colorful wraps are used. Traditionally, though, jajim is woven on a horizontal loom with colorful fine threads of wool and usually by a single weaver. Both sides of the jajim can be used, which is why it has become a multi-purpose article, often quilted and used as a cover or blanket, and sometimes even spread on the ground. The taste and talent of these people can also be seen through the designs of their earthenware. Pottery is perhaps the earliest and most important invention of mankind in Iran, dating back to the 7th millennium BC. In the small town of Khusf, not much has changed since the invention of the potter's wheel. Symmetry is omnipresent in Persian craftsmanship. The detailed patterns of the 7,000-year-old art of marquetry are no exception. When it comes to decorating your home traditionally, wooden lattice doors and windows with stained glass are things you simply can't miss. The number of wooden pieces needed for each door is striking. It is usually beechwood or sycamore that is considered the best for refined carving at this level.
Woodwork like this dates back at least 1500 years. Some historians say it even dates back to the Sassanid era. So, I guess we have to admit that there's at least a little bit something to the Persian old saying that art only belongs to Iranians.
Gisu Misha Ahmadi for Iran.
pass by when I'm with the one I love. Even sunlight makes it through the dark in a cold, misty sky. When I'm all alone tonight, you'll be right here by my side. No matter what the world brings, and even if the birds won't sing, better times are on their way, cause I know you're there. And even if the sun won't smile, I know it's been a while since I felt any light, but I know you're there. Good times, they never last, I wish they were around. Their time is past us now, still I haven't made a sound. Some folks are dying to live, and others live to die. Somehow when I think of you, I smile deep inside. No matter what the world brings, and even if the birds won't sing, better times are on their way, cause I know you're there. And even if the sun won't smile, I know it's been a while since I felt any light, but I know you're there. The grass was greener on the other side. The world just gray now, but we out of time. And when I lie alone and stare into the dark, I remember what you said, I watch the stars spark. I know it isn't even time to talk, but I know you're on their way, cause I know you're there. And even if the sun won't smile, I know it's been a while since I felt any light, but I know you're there. No matter what the world brings, and even if the birds won't sing, better times are on their way, cause I know you're there. And even if the sun won't smile, I know it's been a while since I felt any light, but I know you're there.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the pitch.
On Youth Station.
Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamidi.
Islamidi.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all of time.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRB English Radio. Welcome back to a very new episode of Youth Station. Well, this is me, Asma. Once more, I have the honor to be at your service. I have with me
Brother Ali at your service, like always.
Yes, thank you for being here.
They would say never is too late or time flies. Mm-hmm. Do you really believe in that?
Well, I don't have to believe in it. It's something factual, so much of real.
Because some people really want to pursue time and they just want to do everything. And they worry about time and losing the time as a concept, real mm-hmm. concept in their life. So they cannot enjoy the moment.
Yeah, they cannot enjoy the moment. But time flies so fast. Even we have it. Of course, there are many narrations about this topic. But then Imam Ali alayhi salam says that if you do not seize the moments as a given opportunity to you, then you would regret it. So to take care of time as something that is a blessing and has been given to you as a gift, and you have to take care of it, and mm-hmm. you have to make the best out of it, it's something so real.
But then, again,
we have this concept of moderation.
Yeah.
For everything, you have to consider moderation. Like, even in this concept, okay, time is so important to me, but not to the point that I forget the quality of what I'm doing in mm-hmm. this time.
Mm-hmm.
many people rush into getting a new job. You know, you feel as if they're in a pace.
Exactly.
As if it's competition. And then they want to finish their study, get to university, get the best job, have a good income, then build a family, then have children. And then we come up with this question, so what? If you do not actually care about the quality of your life. If you just do because you have to do it at a certain age or at a certain phase of your life. If you're a person like this, I guess you definitely have to have an overview upon what you have been doing up until now.
If a person didn't use his or her time to achieve some sort of, I don't know, achievement, would he get the chance again to make it up for what he has lost? Do you believe in that?
See, there's something like opportunities are given to you as a gift. You can't seize them. You have two ways. There's no way other than that. You have to seize it or you just ignore it.
Yeah.
Once you seize it, okay, good for you. But once you have forgotten about that, have ignored it, then I guess the best is for you not to think about it.
But it's not like easy. Like Chris, opportunity, the concept of opportunity, as Imam Ali in one of the narrations says, Al-Fursatu Tamurru Marra Sahab.
Exactly, yeah.
Which opportunity passes like the cloud. So take advantage of good opportunities. I mean, it's not all the time easy to detect what is an opportunity for me or what is. I mean, sometimes we are so
engaged with the details.
Or neglectful of that is an opportunity to officially address something as an opportunity for yourself. So, I mean, how can you be all the time, be aware, be noticed sharply that this is an opportunity for me. I have to take it. It's the moment for me. Sometimes we are waiting from a white knight. Sometimes we are waiting that a white knight comes and save us from our miserable life or I don't know, a boring life. We are waiting a force out there comes and give us or lead us.
I guess that's natural in all the human beings. Like we all feel that someday, even if it's not about someone else, an unknown, a stranger coming to me, changing all my life upside down, and then knowing all the answers to my mysterious questions out of nowhere.
Yes.
Out of the blue. I guess there is such a thing in all of us, but then a part of us knows what the truth is. So we all know, and based on what God has said in his book, in the Holy Book of Quran, we have it that us human beings have given the knowledge of both, the truth and the wrong and the false. So we already know what is false, what is right. And I do believe that about the opportunities, we also know that this is my one and only opportunity.
Yeah.
If I take it, it would change my life. If I don't, again, it would change my life. So it's just a matter of courage, I guess. The matter of courage and being brave in order to just seize the moment. Some people would know, they're fully aware of the fact that, okay, this is my life's chance. This is my life's opportunity. This is the matter of life and death. If I take it, then I would turn into this different person entirely. But then I have seen examples of these people. They're not brave enough to just get into the heart of those. Because, you know, even for those opportunities, you have to do some efforts. It's not going to be so easy and peachy. No, you have to go through too much of hardships. Then many people are not brave enough. They're not courageous enough to get into that much of hardship.
And sometimes some people are just picky and they say, what if there would be another option? A better option for me.
I guess if they're picky and they know what they're doing, then they would know the percentage of a better chance to come to them. Or maybe you can just, you know, you can use both chances, the one that you're waiting for and the one that has already been given to you. But generally speaking, I think it's much more logical to think about what is in hand.
Or maybe they're just not, as you said, they are not just courage enough. They are not just brave enough to just
embrace the situation.
Embrace the ramification.
Exactly. So for chances and opportunities, I guess they do exist for every single person, because it's impossible for you not to have the slightest, at least trace of opportunity or chance in your life. But then it depends on you many times, at least, if we look at it so realistically. It depends on you, how you look at things, how you define opportunity, and how you react when an opportunity is given to you. Right now, there is an opportunity for us to go and have a sip of water. So why not? Oh, let's go for a break and then we'll be back.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Yeah, there are many people who believe that it's never too late. I would stand in the middle and say, yes, sometimes it's never too late, but sometimes, no, it's a big lie. It's too late.
Can I agree more? Definitely. Yeah. I mean, sometimes life doesn't give you a second chance in some cases. So you have to seize the moment and opportunity, as you said. But sometimes if you miss, for any reason you can imagine, if you miss some opportunity, you cannot just go, I don't know, find a corner and just feel you are the most miserable person in the world.
Exactly.
Maybe you can take it as a lesson and find and wait for the next moment. Maybe the next moment, maybe you can just take it as a lesson, as I said, and next moment would be even a better opportunity. Maybe it was just a test.
Yeah. Well,
brought upon you by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to just make you more mature, feel more mature.
Yeah, feel more mature and be ready enough to take this blessing as a blessing, because sometimes the blessing is given to you, but you take it for granted. But then, if that thing is given to you in another age, maybe what you're going to feel is that, okay, I am blessed. So you're going to just appreciate it more. So there's always a chance for you to have some better stuff. But then you would always have that trigger inside of you that reminds you of the thing that you wanted, but you didn't get at the right time. So this would remain there.
Exactly.
I don't deny it.
And when it comes to time and make the best of our time, sometimes it's not just about attaining or, I don't know, achieving something. Sometimes it's about, imagine when you said something, you know, bad to your friend, or you did have an issue with your friend and you want to make it up for her or him. Sometimes we just, you know, postpone it to the time that we find the, you know, as we say, proper moment.
But that proper moment would never come.
Never come.
Yeah.
And then you regret it. Oh, I should have, it was an easy job. I should have done it before. I should have said sorry or whatever. Sometimes it's not just about something concrete, something tangible. It's about relationships, or, for example, saying sorry to a person, or, you know.
Oh, to your parents, of course.
Parents.
As youngsters, sometimes you're not in the mood to take words in, to digest words that are given to you. Well, I don't want to get into that discussion of, okay, parents also have got to follow some rules in advising you or in giving pieces of advice or instructing you even. Now, put that aside, but then what's on you, what's related to your share, is that you should have this always in mind, that the blissful moment that you have with your family, with your friends, with the dear ones are not going to be there forever.
Yes.
So there's one day that, of course, would come, and then you would just regret it. And the only thing you could do at that time is a sigh, a deep sigh from the depth of your heart.
Definitely.
So don't let that moment happen to you. Whenever you wish, like telling them how much you love them, do not hesitate. Just go and say it.
Sometimes we feel like too much of proud, like we feel we are really proud of ourselves, so we don't want to, I don't know, say sorry or admit or acknowledge what you have done.
Exactly. And sometimes I won't say it's about, you see, it's not pride sometimes even. It's the matter of, okay, you would say, okay, she's there. My mom is going to be always there.
Yeah.
My dad is going to be always there. So I don't think, I don't have the slightest clue about a future without them.
Yes.
That's why I take them for granted, which is actually the worst thing I would do to myself, because life is all about the beautiful moments you create for yourself, not you wait for them to be created for you. So if there's anything in your mind you want to create as a memory with you and your friends, with your family, go for it.
So what is the reason that some of us, we don't do it at a proper time? Is it because we think they are always there for us? Or is it because we feel that if we say sorry, we put ourselves in danger somehow?
Of course, both. Because many of us have got that pride that is so hard to be swallowed. So that's one part of the story. But the other part, which to me is so much more important, and I guess this is what many of the cases are, I guess it's because we take it for granted.
Definitely.
We don't imagine a day without these dear ones. That's why we say, okay, I don't have to tell him or her how sorry I am. I don't have to tell them how much I love them. They already know that. While we forget about this fact that the more you tell your dear ones you love them, it's going to be actually adding to the quality of your relationships. And
yes,
then it would open many new doors in your life.
I guess, unfortunately, for some of us, we should lose at certain points till we appreciate that moment or that, you know,
mm-hmm,
lost opportunity or...
Yeah, so take the moments and seize them before it's too late. Yes, there is this notion that says it's never too late, but if you don't believe in it, then today I have to proclaim and I have to officially announce that there is the other side of the coin, which is it is too late. So don't let that be your eternal motto, that it was too late for me. If there's anything you want to do, just go for it. Get into the heart of whatever you want to do, and that way you're going to save all the miserable, regretful things that you would say to yourself at the back of your mind. So this was all. I hope you enjoyed it. Until another session, I bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you, dear youth, will see that day, and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about this.
We'll discuss that, inshallah, in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum wa
rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Latif, Ya Latif, Ya Latif, Ya Latif, Ya Latif.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Steadfastness and logical reasoning. The lesson and approach of infallible imams. April 24th, 2025. There's another hadith, which is again from Zurara. Since Zurara resided in Kufa, he sent a message to Imam Sadiq, peace be upon him, in which he said, "One of our friends from among the Shia has fallen into debt, and his creditors are pursuing him. Since he has no money, he has fled the city and has no place to stay. In this matter, the matter of the caliphate will be resolved in a year or two." In the narration, it says, "Hadha al-amr," which means this matter, this person who is in debt, can wait until you come to power and all problems are solved. But if it's going to take a long time, our friends can collect money and pay his debt. In other words, someone like Zurara was expecting the matter of the caliphate to be settled within just 1 or 2 years. The reason you see that people came to Imam Sadiq, peace be upon him, and repeatedly asked, "Why don't you rise up? Why don't you rise up?" is because they were waiting. That is, they had heard something. Some news had reached their ears. And the continuation of that same narration in which the year 140 AH was mentioned, he, Imam Sadiq, said, "You've exposed this, so God has delayed it." So if the Shia had been discreet and not revealed this matter, perhaps the matter would have been resolved at that very time. Just imagine how much history would have changed. The entire path of humanity would have taken a different course. And today, the world would have been entirely different. In other words, our shortcomings, speaking without restraint at one time, our failure to help at other times, our unnecessary objections, our lack of patience, and our flawed analyses of situations sometimes have consequences, historical consequences. They can truly alter the course of events. Therefore, we must be very careful. And of course, Imam Sadiq's life was extraordinary, unique, and successful in terms of spreading the divine laws, and in terms of the numerous narrations that have been related from that magnanimous Imam and his companions. Of course, regarding the 4,000 students that have been attributed to him, one may imagine that the Imam would begin a lesson and 4,000 people would sit there in front of him. That's not how it was. Over the course of his life, 4,000 individuals narrated from him as recorded in that book. There are 4,000 people who narrated from him. That's what is meant by 4,000 students.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
Allah, 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 Allah,
Ya Rabbi,
Allah, Allah,
Ya Rabbi,
Allah, Allah, Allah.
a light that still shines from the faces of those near. In the night they will stand and cry in hope and in fear. Nothing in the world can ever turn their hearts away from the calm of surrender they find when they say,
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pourreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
A new poll shows that President Donald Trump is losing the support of the largest unofficial political party in the United States, independent voters. A latest top survey found that 57% of all Americans now disapprove of Trump's performance, a record low for his second term. Trump's approval could fairly be said to be at its lowest point in either of his two terms. His net approval rating of minus 18 points is the second lowest ever recorded for him, and many pollsters disregard the accuracy of a minus 21 approval rating recorded in November 2017.
I think there's so much going on that it's really hard to even start. But one of the biggest things is he just keeps skirting the line of what's appropriate. And every single time that he gets closer to that line, getting towards inappropriate, he's just getting so close. And everyone knows the game that he's playing. And the game that he's playing is, how much can I get away with? And nobody likes that.
I didn't approve of him when he came in for the second term. Certainly his attacks on our freedoms, attacking organizations like this who are standing up and speaking against him. And, of course, what he's doing, under the guise of, undocumented immigration and detaining people without cause and just all the, all the rhetoric.
Trump's low approval rating is also being attributed to the recent assassination of an Islamophobic but very popular right-wing commentator, which many are calling a watershed moment in increasingly violent American politics.
The assassination has led to increased calls for anti-Trump protesters to be stopped, arrested, investigated, and even deported. that has many accusing the administration of using McCarthyite tactics to silence freedom of speech.
I think a lot of people are afraid to come out. You know, you oppose Trump, you get primaried and knocked out of office, or you oppose Trump and you get a pizza sent to your house saying, I know where you and your wife and your kids live. And, you know, it's just total dictatorship.
Despite being the richest country in the world, inequality in America is so rampant that a recent study found that 67% of workers live paycheck to paycheck. That's an almost 7% increase since just last year, and the poll only represents people who are employed. Last week, jobless claims hit a four-year high. Polls show that price inflation and jobs are the two most important issues for voters. Rami Mazahiri, Washington, D.C.
Yemeni and Palestinian flags draped the 70 Square as hundreds of thousands rallied in solidarity with Palestine, condemning U.S. and Israeli genocide in Gaza. Protesters also condemned Saudi Arabia and warned the kingdom of the dangers if it sides with Israel in any military operations against Yemen.
The Yemeni people are standing with Palestine against disgrace and humiliation. We are here in direct defiance against the U.S. and Israel, and we also send a warning to Saudi Arabia that if it gets involved in helping any of our enemies at sea, we will also deal with them.
Protesters also vowed that past Yemeni strikes prove Yemen's ability to hit back against Israel, U.S., and Saudi Arabia if necessary.
From this field of jihad, we tell the Zionists and the Americans that we will never fear your bombings on us. We will also send a message to those traitors, especially Saudi Arabia. Do not make the mistake of entering a battle you are not prepared for. Take heed of what we did to your Aramco facilities in the previous wars.
We condemn the failed Arab summit. They are only puppets of U.S. and Israel. We in Yemen stand firm as a mountain with our leader, and we will continue to attack by land, air, and sea against all enemies.
Yemenis are hoping for the best, but are preparing for the worst, an all-out battle with Israel and all its allies if the aggressions continue.
Yemen has stepped up its military operations, not only in support of Gaza, but to prevent what many believe is Israel's ultimate plan to take over parts of West Asia if the regime is not stopped immediately. Yusuf Mawri, Sana'a.
Joint U.S.-South Korea military drills have dramatically increased in frequency in the last few years, especially near the DMZ. Residents want the disturbing and provocative drills to end, and they have some support at South Korea's National Assembly, where lawmakers push back on U.S. demands.
They're simultaneously pressuring South Korea to increase training and even send strategic weapons to South Korea. Therefore, peace on the Korean Peninsula can only be achieved by boldly rejecting these demands from the U.S. military and immediately halting military exercises.
Anti-U.S. sentiment has been on the rise in South Korea, also due to U.S. President Donald Trump's tariff extortion.
FTAs and free trade have long since disappeared, and the UN and WTO systems have also disappeared. What the U.S. is doing now is literally colonialism. We cannot give in here.
It was back in September of 2018 that South Korean President Moon Jae-in and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un signed an agreement on measures to reduce tensions, particularly in the border areas. With a liberal leader back in office in Seoul, peace advocates want the 2018 deal renewed and drills to end.
Continuing these joint exercises will only serve to further fuel the fire and contribute nothing to peace. The South Korea-U.S. joint military exercises must be suspended, and the hostile and Cold War attitudes must be replaced with an attitude of dialogue and peaceful coexistence.
Calls for a stronger stance in relations with the U.S. president have been widely expressed in Seoul, underscoring public sentiment that the government should adopt a more assertive approach in its diplomatic dealings.
South Korean President Lee Jae-myung is under public pressure here to take a firm stand on issues with the United States, as just days ago some 300 high-tech workers were expelled from the U.S. President Donald Trump also demands $350 billion of investment from South Korea, and for Seoul to drastically increase its military spending.
On Monday, the U.S., South Korea, and Japan began another round of military drills in waters off of Jeju Island. Frank Smith, Seoul.
The relationship between the federal government in Baghdad and the Kurdistan regional government continues to swing between tension and compromise amid financial and economic complications that have yet to find a solution, but negotiation is still ongoing between the two sides.
Negotiations swing back and forth, sometimes with pressure on Erbil, other times on Baghdad. But the ultimate outcome depends on whether the region delivers its oil to the federal government in return for its full share of 12.67%. So far, however, the Kurdish stance remains unclear, both in interpreting the percentage and in its unilateral handling of oil sales.
The issue of oil export from the region through the Jihan port, which was supposed to resume at the capacity of around 400,000 barrels per day, remains on hold. Politically, there appear to be a temporary arrangement to keep matters moving until the upcoming elections, as the Kurdistan Democratic Party seeks to secure concessions through its role in parliamentary alliance and the formation of the new government.
There may be certain compromises by the government to keep matters moving forward, especially as we approach elections and the subsequent formation of a new government. The Kurdistan Regional Government, particularly the Kurdistan Democratic Party, appears to be seeking to secure certain privileges during this phase, both before and after the elections, by playing a role in the largest parliamentary coalition that nominates the prime minister and forms the new government.
With no decisive results from ongoing committees, the unresolved files are likely to face further delays until border political deal is reached. The relationship between Baghdad and Erbil has a long swung between tension and cooperation over oil budget and authority, making it one of the main challenges in Iraqi politics. The ongoing dialogue seen as strategic opportunity to preserve national balance. Nawar Faik, Baghdad.
The Iranian delegation attending the IAEA General Conference has held an event shedding light on the country's resolution that reaffirms the prohibition of attacks on nuclear facilities. The Venezuelan envoy to Vienna chaired the event.
Welcome to this side event organized by the Islamic Republic of Iran to address the issue of the attacks against nuclear sites and facilities, a serious threat to international peace and security, and to address its implications for the non-proliferation regime.
The event was addressed by some of the IAEA states, which co-sponsored it, such as China, Pakistan, and South Africa.
All the members, they should side with one side, which is preserving the NPT regime and IAEA safeguard regime. So let's work together to try to stand to side on the right side of history.
Given the grave consequences for population and the environment of any attacks on nuclear facilities, in our view, the space for attacks on nuclear facilities is non-existent.
Meanwhile, Russia called on Britain, France, and Germany, collectively known as the E3, to stop the snapback mechanism. The E3 triggered the mechanism in early August that would restore UN Security Council sanctions against Iran. The final deadline for a decision is September 27. The Russian envoy also criticized the U.S. and Israel for attacking Iranian nuclear sites in June.
What Israel and the United States did was the biggest blow to the IAEA safeguards system. The E3 should also stop the implementation of snapback mechanism in New York. Triggering snapback was illegal, politically irrelevant, and counterproductive.
Iran's permanent representative to the IAEA reiterated the illegality of the U.S. and Israeli attacks on the Iranian nuclear sites.
The attack on the Iran's nuclear facilities under the IAEA safeguard is unprecedented in the history of the agency. This is the first time, while the facility being under full scope safeguards of the agency and inspected on a daily basis, we had inspectors in all facilities almost all the time, and facilities been attacked by one non-party to the NPT, and the other one, unfortunately, the depository of the NPT, which is the United States.
The U.S. delegation is meanwhile putting pressure on IAEA member states, particularly in the Western and North African regions, not to support the Iranian resolution.
In 1977, Amendments 1 and 2 of the Geneva Convention prohibited attacks and threats on nuclear facilities. But the U.S. are threatening to cut bilateral ties with countries if the Iranian resolution passes, a reckless behavior putting global security at risk. Dieter Reinisch, Vienna.
It all began with all the trappings of a traditional state visit. Horse-drawn carriage, royal pageantry, a formal greeting by the king, all behind the walls of this 11th century castle away from the public. But as the motorcade rolled, the marchers advanced in their thousands, a raucous sea of voices organized by the Trump Not Welcome coalition and allied groups, making their ire clear.
He's a rapist. He is a racist. He is enabling and funding a genocide in Palestine. He is a nightmare in all ways for the values of the UK. He is funding tax cuts for the super rich by taking away the health care of ordinary people in the United States. He's got his goons out on the street disappearing people and bundling them into the back of vans so that they vanish without a trace. He is a danger to democracy in the United States and to prosperity and peace around the world.
The visit comes hot on the heels of the far-right march in London this past week, seeing a common threat with Trump's rhetoric. The UK says ties with the US are vital for trade. For the protesters, the moral cost outweighs the political calculus.
See, the way some governments are behaving and our government is behaving is to get as close to Trump as they can in the hope of getting some crumbs from his table. You can sort of see that on the level of rationality of one country, but they are allowing, by doing that, they are empowering him to carry on behaving in all these sorts of terrible ways around the world. So I think there's an alternative where these countries in the world say to Trump, no, we're not having your tariffs. We won't let you. We won't trade with you. If you do that to us, we will trade. And I think that's what they should be doing, is seeking to take him down.
While criticizing the UK government for inviting Trump in the first place, everyone here also highlighted Trump's enabling of Israel's genocidal war on Palestinians.
My primary message to Trump is, you're supplying the arms, you're supplying the political support, you're giving the diplomatic cover to Israel. You could stop the destruction of Gaza straight away if you wanted to.
I'm part of an encampment outside the American embassy where we are pointing out that the USA is funding the genocide in Palestine. And Trump is the face of genocide.
It's been a tumultuous week for the British Prime Minister, from the far-right march to a cabinet reshuffle to the sacking of his ambassador to the U.S. over links to convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein and the continued public pressure over his government's support for the Israeli regime.
Away from the pomp and pageantry extended to Donald Trump, the voices here say they want a different legacy, one not of spectacle, but of justice. They want the British government to ask itself, does it want to be remembered for its business deals with the United States or for complicity in genocide? Saipur is up in London.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
Have a very good time. This is Iran Radio, and here are some interesting facts about Islam. In 10th century Cordoba, an Umayyad Islamic dynasty city in Spain with over 70 libraries. The palace library alone had over 60,000 volumes, all written by hand. At the time, the best Latin library in Europe had only 600 parchment books. While the Chinese invested paper sometime before the 2nd century BC, Muslims were the first to mass-produce paper on an intercontinental scale, developing a culture dependent on its abundance. As the price of paper dropped, literacy rose and booksellers and libraries became integral parts of every Muslim city. Like Judaism and Christianity, Islam originated in the Middle East. I'm delighted to unveil what's ahead in this upcoming hour. We begin with Islamic Upbringing Guides Parents with Faith-Based Wisdom. This program aims to answer frequently asked questions regarding children and adolescents and their upbringing. After that, we'll feature more of our radio productions. Next up, we have the teacher. Our scholars in the studio will present a comprehensive review of key teachings and concepts in the Islamic and Shia theology and ethical systems.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. Welcome to another enlightening episode of Islamic Upbringing, where we dive deep into the essential aspects of nurturing your youth in line with Islamic teachings. In this program, our discussions are rooted in the guidance of the Holy Quran and the timeless wisdom of Hadith from our beloved Prophet Muhammad, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon him and his purified family, and the insightful narratives of our noble Imams. I'm glad to have with us today Brother Muhammad Liaqat Abbas, a research scholar from the Seminary of Qom, who possesses a wealth of knowledge in both Islamic studies as well as psychology. So, Brother Liaqat, assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum salam, sister.
A very warm welcome.
Thank you so much.
Discipline is something that every parent wants in their child, and every family wants discipline in their members of the family. So, what you want is something ideal, but the efforts required are always tough because nothing comes overnight. And Brother Liaqat Abbas, I would want you to tell us that how do parents instill this big trait of discipline in the children?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. First and foremost, and I would say golden words over here in the beginning, what our parents should be writing it down and should be noting it down, not just on a piece of paper, but also in mind, in heart, and should repeat this statement some 100 times so that the parent understands it completely, is that discipline is not strictness.
Okay.
Discipline is not strictness.
Being strict.
Yeah. If you are strict, if I'm strict with my child, I'm going to turn him into a well-disciplined man, a well-disciplined child. This is a very wrong concept.
Okay.
Okay. So, discipline actually